Good morning, everyone. It's funny. I drove up today and I didn't see many cars, and I thought, oh, where is everybody? But I must be off at festivals or something, but here you are. My talk today is going to be about koans, which we've been studying in a class taught by Guy Gibbon and I, and also about living the question. Living the question. So koans. Koan means public case, but that's pretty dry. Doesn't really capture what they are at all. They're actually encounters, brief stories of encounters between monks and masters that are still alive today, still vivid for us if we want to look into them. Here's some descriptions of koans. This one by John Tarrant. Vials of light. Vials of light. Benevolent messages from our ancestors. Suggestions on how to approach happiness through unmaking, undoing, dismantling everything that is unhappiness. Subverting. And they're designed to take you beyond what you can currently imagine. They're invitations to awakening, to have a profound change of heart, which then results in having to do things differently. They're encouragements to make an ally out of the unpredictability of your mind. And finding, rather than finding chaos, they're finding beauty. You hold out the possibility of transformation, even if you're trying to resolve seemingly insoluble problems. And they'll change your idea of who you are, which will require courage, determination, curiosity, and faith. Trust. Let's say trust. So we've been working with a few koans that are pretty traditional koans. What is this is one. Beyond picking and choosing. And mu. I've been drawn to mu because, I don't know why, I think it's because Bill Tresh, a friend of ours, gave a talk one time on mu. And he talked about being at a monastery out east in New York where people were sitting in the trees, mooing. And that very image really captured me. I thought, whoa, that is crazy. I don't know what's that about. And I wanted to look into it. So some of you in the class have heard a bit about moo already, but you'll just have to hear it again. So here's the case. A monk came to see Chow Chow, which in Japanese his name is Choshu. And Choshu was highly regarded by Dogen, our great ancestor Dogen. Dogen was critical a lot of the Chan ancestors, but thought highly of Chow Chow. So a monk came to see Chow Chow. Does a dog have Buddha nature? Moo. That's the whole encounter. So Mu is the first koan in the Mu Mon Kon, or the Gateless Gate collection. And Wu Men, whose commentary, it's his collection. Wu Men put the collection together, and he puts Mu in as the first koan. and said that it took him 6 years. He worked for 6 years with Mu himself and had no progress until one day he was just hanging out in the monastery and heard the sound of the bell for lunch, and he awakened. He woke up. It's considered to be a barrier koan. It's often one of the first given to folks that work in the Rinzai tradition with a teacher on the koan curriculum. They call it a curriculum. Here's Wu Men's verse. Dog, Buddha nature, the full presentation of the whole is Mu. With a bit of has or has not, body is lost, life is lost. So what does that mean? The minute we start to think is not, good, bad, right, wrong, being, non-being, body is lost, life is lost. The moment is, we're off the point. We've wandered away. So even though in Buddhism, dating from the time of Shakyamuni and later developed in the Mahayana and the Lotus Sutra and the Avatamsaka Sutra, the term Buddha nature has been preached and it's the central concept, really, about our inherent capacity for awakening. But it's kind of a term that I think some of us Buddhists hear so much that we kind of don't know really what it is after a while. It's kind of like God and love in that sense. So it's been proclaimed. So why does the monk have to ask, does the dog have Buddha nature? Does a dog have Buddha nature? So I think that this monk is really saying, do I have Buddha nature? He's going with a real burning question. You know, and he's being being really brave to ask that question of his teacher. He's really exposing himself, you know, and his own insecurity about whether or not he's capable of having Buddha nature, much less a dog. So why did Zhao Zhao answer Mu? What does that even mean? Well, it means no. It means no. And some people teach working with it to use the word no. But it's possible that the word no might be discouraging. So actually, the no in Mu also contains yes. So this koan is disturbing. It kind of has a sense of it. It'll disturb you to work with it, and a sense of not knowing, and of being unsure. Our ordinary mind struggles to understand it. There's really no way to do that. A monk asks Yun Men, "What is Buddha?" Yun Men answers, "To break through this word. To break through this word." The monk then asks, "What's it like to break through this word?" But Yun Men responds, "A thousand miles, the same mood." So in neither case did Chow Chow or Yun Men give a reasonable explanation to the monks asking the questions. They can't grasp it. It puts the onus back on the monks. This case puts the onus back on us to work with the koan, to work with the question. It could be, what is this? Or what? Simply what? Guy and I find that just one word works well for us in questioning what. To try to break through. So it's considered a barrier koan. And what is it What's the barrier? What do you think the barrier is? Well, I give you the answer. What I think the barrier is here is for us in working with a koan or working with a burning question of our own, a life koan, a genjo koan, like, you know, could be something really little, like, when am I going to get married? When am I going to find my soulmate? Or it could be something like, who am I? What is this really? Could be anything. It could be anything. So I think the barrier is really what we create. It's our constructions, our mental constructions. It's our perceptions. It's our beliefs. That's the barrier. That's the barrier that the koan is addressing. That's the barrier. Here's some comments on Mu from Wu Men. For the practice of Zen, it's imperative that you pass through the barriers set up by the ancestors. So, you know, one barrier might be that there's something lacking in us. There's something lacking about in our practice, in our life. Things aren't the way we think they should be. Things don't feel quite right. Ancestors here mean ancestors embody the Dharma, as do our teachers, as do you, as do the lake, does the lake and the rocks and the trees embody the Dharma. We're instructed to sit with it, breathe with it, walk with it, sweep with it, go to sleep with it, wake up with it, brush our teeth with it, with the question, whether that's Mu or whatever it is, to completely suffuse our body and mind with the question. It's like Saint Paul's, pray without ceasing. Praying without ceasing. Constantly coming back to the question. Bringing it to mind. Mentally riding the breath with it in Zazen. Waiting for the bus. Walking down the street. Mu. Or what is it? When the mind comes up with a story, when the mind comes up with a plan, Mu, what is it? So eventually, through going back again and again to that phrase, to that question, everything is revealed. Nothing is hidden. All of our deepest beliefs and ideas are exposed to us, illuminated, let's say, illuminated, so that we can see them. So then everything that is not self drops away, not true self, begins to drop away. I mean, this is a long process. This is a long process. Could be years, and it could happen today, right now. So Mu is a single response to duality, to the is not, the way we think, and to proliferation, the proliferation of our constructions, fantasies, stories, beliefs. And as I said, in this knows also yes. So Wu Men goes on and he asks, so how should you work with it? Wu Men is kind of playing with us a little bit. He's kind of playing with us, and I'm not giving you all of his commentary. It's really long. I sort of cherry-picked a few of the lines. It's very long. He's using our greed to wake up, to motivate us in his commentaries. It's kind of like the story in the, I think it's from the Lotus Sutra of the father, the house that's burning and the children are trapped in the house, and the father, to lure the kids out of the house to save them, he tells them that there's this wonderful cart outside and it's filled with toys that he got especially for them. And so Wu Men is trying to lure us a bit to using our greed to wake up, to get us to keep doing this practice, whatever it takes to keep doing this practice. Not just the practice I'm talking about today, the specific practice of working with a koan, but just continuing to sit, continuing to practice waking up, continuing to see what's coming up, continuing to be with our mind, to be with bare attention with what is, just is. So to see, to just hear the rain, to just feel the breeze, to just feel irritated. And not add on to it that we're a bad person because we're feeling irritated. So to be simpler, to be able to be with what is, and what is more than what we think it is. Vials of light, everything has a light around it. There is a woman, there's a story of a woman who was awakened while frying donuts in her kitchen. it's an old story, but it's in the Hidden Lamp collection that we studied in morning study group. And she's obviously not just a regular old lady, you know. I mean, she is just a regular old lady, but she's obviously done some work, you know. Not everyone has an awakening experience while frying donuts in the kitchen. So we can assume that she's been working with a phrase. She's been working with a question. And actually, she was a student of Hakuin. And she suddenly has this experience of waking up, and she throws the pan across the room. And her husband says, "What are you doing?" And she says, "Never mind. This is not in your realm," or something like that. Something like that, you know. And she runs off to tell Hakuin. She's excited to tell her teacher what's happened. She tells him that there's a light in her body, that she's filled with light, because Hakuin has made a statement in his talks about everything being filled with light. So then he asks her, "Well, is shit filled with light?" And she says, "Yes, even shit is filled with light." And then she grabs him by the nose boxes his nose, and she says, "You old rascal," to him. Suddenly there's no difference between them, you know, and they're just laughing, just having a huge laugh together. So thank goodness for Zen, which I've heard Guy often say, it's Buddhism with jokes, Buddhism with with humor, and yet it's also about the great matter of life and death and of existence, and what does it mean to be alive? What does it mean to be alive? Yesterday we had a workshop here called, let's see, Living in Uncertain Times, KSV, and it was a good group. There's about 19 of us. And Kaya helps people to grapple with the question of how do we live in this time with our grief and our rage and our hopelessness and despair about what's happening to this world, about species disappearing, about glaciers melting, about racism and the pain of that, about economic injustice and greed. And she gave five points about how we can see this as an opportunity, this crisis of our situation that we're in, as an opportunity, as a gate. She didn't use that word, gate or Dharma gate, but it was clearly in that spirit. And it was quite inspiring to me. It was quite inspiring. One of the key takeaways for me was that in order to be able to act from a place of kindness and compassion and with creativity and respond to the situation that we're in, rather than being immobilized with numbness or despair, rather than being immobilized and unable to act, which I don't know if you can relate to that, but I think that's been a problem for me and for others around this situation that we're in. All of us are in together. And what she said was that going into the emotions themselves is one of the gates. So to really feel, allow yourself, but in a safe environment, in community, hopefully, because it's really hard to feel separate and alone in this. And we often feel powerless. But to go right into that rage and not to act it out, but to feel it, to feel the pain of it, to feel all the emotions, the grief, the loss. So she had us do various things that really did help us to share with each other what we think about in relation to the problems, and also get in touch with our feelings. And we weren't overwhelmed. You know, there's often this fear being one of the emotions, that we'll be overwhelmed by our feelings and won't be able to cope, and therefore won't look strong and independent. She also talked about something that she learned from Joanna Macy, Buddhist teacher and deep ecologist, called the Great Turning, which she calls this time that we're living in on the level of consciousness, that one of the pieces of good news about this time is that there really is widespread coming to awareness about our interconnection, about what Thich Nhat Hanh and Kaya were calling interbeing. So, like some of you have heard of Indra's web, where we're all connected, we're each a jewel in a knot within a vast web. And that people are waking up to that. I often feel really encouraged by the things that come my way through the internet about what people are doing to take action, what people are doing, and all the information that comes my way. Well, sometimes I don't like that too much, all the information, and then I have to discern you know, what I want to look at. I don't really want to see cat videos, although I like cats. And, you know, there's a lot of things that I don't want to look at. But, and then sometimes I can't bear some of the bad news that comes is, you know, there's times when I feel strong and can read it, and other times I have to wait or not read it. So I have to discern. But it's really good news, you know, all the movements that are happening in all the different countries where there isn't democracy, where the people want democracy. Anyway, there are things happening that were not happening 20 years ago in my lifetime that are very positive. But in order for me to be in a place where I can really take responsibility for being part of the whole web and the whole system that created these problems in the first place, and have some kindness for myself and all of us, I have to be in a place of happiness and of well-being, at least well-being. So that's where beauty comes in. That's where appreciation of how beautiful it still is in this world comes in. Suffusing ourselves with that beauty and seeking out inspiration are very important in order to just be with what's happening without shutting off, without being numb, without turning away, or becoming passive, you know? Either becoming passive or starting to get aggressive and pushing, because it doesn't help either. It doesn't help. Save all beings, which is another big koan. How can we save all beings? There's a necessity to slow down, to take the time to mull over, to reflect, and to connect with emptiness, with that void that Mu represents, that void which is full of possibility. I have a poem for you that it's by Pablo Neruda, and it's actually about his awakening to poetry. But it is awakening, so it seems to fit. So I'll read that. And it was at that age poetry arrived in search of me. I don't know. I don't know where it came from winter or a river. I don't know how or when. They were not voices, they were not words, nor silence, but from a street I was summoned, from the branches of night, abruptly from the others, among violent fires or returning alone. There I was without a face, and it touched me. I did not know what to say. My mouth had no way with names. My eyes were blind, and something started in my soul, fever or forgotten wings, and I made my own way, deciphering that fire, and I wrote the first faint line. Faint, without substance, pure nonsense, pure wisdom of someone who knows nothing. And suddenly I saw the heavens unfastened and open, planets, palpitating plantations, shadow perforated, riddled with arrows, fire and flowers, the winding night, the universe. And I, infinitesimal being, drunk with the great starry void, likeness, image of mystery, felt myself a pure part of the abyss. I wheeled with the stars. My heart broke loose on the wind. It's a beautiful poem, huh? So, how do we live the questions themselves? As Rilke said in letters to a young poet or a young man, he said something like, just try to live with the questions without resolving them. Something like that. I don't recall the exact quote. It was much more poetic sounding than that. So that's what I have to say to you, and maybe you could, I think there's plenty of time for some discussion or comments if you want to share what comes up for you about living with the questions of our times or your own personal question you bring to your practice. Ashley, hi.
I thought it was interesting because he asked about a dog and then the response was mood, which was interesting, because as a reader you couldn't expect that he would bark or something. Kind of the unexpected.
Yeah. Do you believe a dog has Buddha nature, Ashley?
No, that's nothing.
Ding. Somebody else's answer.
Just had a question mark at the end though.
Right. That made it unique, that's true. That was her own expression, her own experience.
Hey.
I couldn't help but remember something that was just really out of the box. When we were raising our children in San Francisco, they attended the prep division at the conservatory. And at the time, the director of the prep division, this is the young people's program, and they study anything from piano to voice to violin to flute. Mm-hmm. And they've got some great teachers. The director happened to be a really, really good piano teacher. And our family, this is just to kind of add to the element, our family was probably the only non-Asian family at the conservatory. Mm-hmm. And we were all just like a big family. And there was a young boy, he must have been about 8, and the director, piano teacher, came up to him and said, I understand you just won the Bartok piano competition, youth competition, the other day. Congratulations. And the little boy looked at him and he said, moo. And it was like, wow. And at that moment, it was like all the preconceived, oh, thank you very much, and all the families and the kids, everybody, and of course the director was a very good natured person, and just with everyone cracked up. But that, I don't know why he said that. He just looked up at the guy and he just said, move. And it just dropped everything off, you know, all those preconceived things. Wow. Really.
How old was he?
The boy was probably about 8.
Wow.
And of course, the parents were probably like, "Oh my God." I just remember that like it was yesterday because the whole room came to life.
That's a great story.
I can't analyze it, but it just happened, you know?
That's wonderful. You could be there and experience that on the chair with us. It's great. Jeffrey.
That workshop yesterday was very helpful for me also, especially the invitation to sit with the emotion. And she pointed out that the rage and the fear and the grief that we feel, if you sit with that long enough, you start to see that underneath that is love.
Yes, that's right.
But especially because just looking at the events in the world today, you see the rage of the people in Ferguson or in Baltimore or in so many other places in the U.S. And it's helpful to me to see that underneath that rage, there is love. That's what's being expressed.
Yeah, her example she used of the woman in the airport with the mink coat on was, it was a stretch for me to go where she went with that, that both she and that woman loved minks. But, you know, I could follow it. I could follow it. I could get there. It was a stretch. So we're really asked to stretch ourselves, right? Laura, thanks.
This came out of you saying that the woman and she both loved minks. I mean, I really can see that in some people, like butterfly collectors. They probably love butterflies more than anything, and yet they end up sticking a pin through the butterfly, you know, and so it's just that human nature to want to grab on to things, that's the part that is harmful. But, yeah.
To be able to see the love of the beauty of the butterfly underneath that. Oh. Yeah.
One of the things that I'm thankful for in our practice is that it is mostly about asking questions. I've spent very little time working with formal koans. For some reason, they've always kind of, I haven't gotten there yet. But one of the very first mornings I ever came and sat here, I asked Rosemary something. And it was because I was very quickly falling in love with this place, and I was thinking of how different it was from how I grew up and what my family would think if I ever told them. It's like, how do you work with something that makes you so happy, but you know somebody, it would make somebody else completely miserable? And she probably could have come up with a very good answer for me, but she looked at me and she's like, maybe that's a koan for you. Mm-hmm. She's like, I've had questions like that. Probably take a few years for you to figure that out. And of course, I've been here for like a month, so. Okay. Rosemary has enough Rosemary about her that I was willing to buy that. A couple of years later, we were up hiking, me and my husband, and all of a sudden he's gone on me. I can't make anyone love me. But Rosemary could have told me that. But there's something very different about figuring it out for yourself.
Yeah.
Because then ownership probably isn't a good word, but you found your own.
It's a realization. It's your realization.
You've come to your own thing behind it.
Yeah.
And it's so far from the tradition that I grew up in, where if you asked a question, you expected to be told an answer. you were expected to be told what your answer should be. And that's very different from the feeling of having an unanswerable question for a few years and then finally maybe grabbing onto an edge of it.
Yeah, it's very different. And at the very least, it develops patience, the ability to just sit with the question, sit with the question, sit with the mind, you know, and patience develops that way, slowly, slowly. Yeah. Yeah, and there's a feeling, there can be a sense of groundlessness. What we can see coming up when we try to... When I was doing my shuso process and I was given a koan case, chose one with Tim, I saw it all come up in me, you know, the desire to get a handle on it, to get a foothold, a foothold, something to grab onto with this thing. And just watching that come up and not being able to do it, and but approaching it from the side, not straight on with my thinking, and using a little creativity, getting some people together and sort of getting impressions, you know, taking a line with the whole group and people throwing out impressions, you know, just different ways. But I saw that all come up. The tendencies that we have to want to get a handle on it because that groundless free fall feeling we have to get used to that feeling, right? We sort of have to get a little practice with that in Zen practice, with that sense of not knowing and a bit of a free fall sometimes. One time years ago when I came to Zen Center, and I don't remember when, it was probably the early 80s, I just stepped into the back entrance, which was the way we all used to come in those days, and just had this momentary flash where everything dropped away. The stairway that I was standing right above to the basement disappeared. You know, it disappeared just for a moment. But it was very interesting to me. I thought, wow. That's all I thought. Wow. You know, what can you think about that? Other times I've had the sense that the split rail fence that, I don't know, I think it's still out there, isn't it? That split rail, that's going to be here long after I die. It's interesting. Two different perspectives. That lake, hopefully, if we don't, you know, if it doesn't dry up or get poisoned, I think we'll take care of it. Anyway, that'll be there long after I am. It's interesting to have a felt sense in the body of that. Well, thank you. I think we need to move on, and I'm really appreciating all of your comments and sharing and being able to share some of the things I've been looking into lately around here, koans and questions and all of our feelings about being here now, what's happening. So thanks again.